Eyes judged the distance between Riley and me. Seth snapped at Riley, forcing him back again, and Victoria hissed. Seth wasn't limping anymore. His circling took him within inches of Edward. His tail brushed Edward's back, and Victoria's eyes bulged. "No, he won't turn on me," Edward said, answering the question in Victoria's head. He used her distraction to slide closer. "You provided us with a common enemy. You allied us." She clenched her teeth, trying to keep her focus on Edward alone. "Look more closely, Victoria," he murmured, pulling at the threads of her concentration. "Is he really so much like the monster James tracked across Siberia?" Her eyes popped wide open, and then began flickering wildly from Edward to Seth to me, around and around. "Not the same," she snarled in her little girl soprano. "Impossible!" "Nothing is impossible," Edward murmured, voice velvet soft as he moved another inch closer to her. "Except what you want. You'll never touch her." She shook her head, fast and jerky, fighting his diversions, and tried to duck around him, but he was in place to block her as soon as she'd thought of the plan. Her face contorted in frustration, and then she shifted lower into her crouch, a lioness again, and stalked deliberately forward. Victoria was no inexperienced, instinct-driven newborn. She was lethal. Even I could tell the difference between her and Riley, and I knew that Seth wouldn't have lasted so long if he'd been fighting this vampire. Edward shifted too, as they closed on each other, and it was lion versus lioness. The dance increased in tempo. It was like Alice and Jasper in the meadow, a blurred spiraling of movement, only this dance was not as perfectly choreographed. Sharp crunches and crackings reverberated off the cliff face whenever someone slipped in their formation, but they were moving too fast for me to see who was making the mistakes. Riley was distracted by the violent valet, his eyes anxious for his partner. Seth struck, crunching off another small piece of the vampire. Riley bellowed and launched a massive backhanded blow that caught Seth full in his broad chest. Seth's huge body soared 10 feet and crashed into the rocky wall over my head with a force that seemed to shake the whole peak. I heard the breath whoosh from his lungs, and I ducked out of the way as he rebounded off the stone and collapsed on the ground a few feet in front of me. A low whimper escaped through Seth's teeth. Sharp fragments of gray stone showered down on my head, scratching my exposed skin. A jagged spike of rock rolled down my right arm, and I caught it reflexively. My fingers clenched around the long shard as my own survival instincts kicked in. Since there was no chance of flight, my body, not caring how ineffectual the gesture was, prepared for a fight. Adrenaline jolted through my veins. I knew the brace was cutting into my palm. I knew the crack in my knuckle was protesting. I knew it, but I could not feel the pain. Behind Riley, all I could see was the twisting flame of Victoria's hair and a blur of white, the increasingly frequent metallic snaps and tears. The gasps and shocked hissings made it clear that the dance was turning deadly for someone. But which someone? Riley lurched toward me, his red eyes brilliant with fury. He glared at the limp mountain of sand-colored fur between us, and his hands, mangled, broken hands, curled into talons. His mouth opened, widened, his teeth glistening, as he prepared to rip out Seth's throat. A second kick of adrenaline hit like an electric shock, and everything was suddenly very clear. Both fights were too close. Seth was about to lose his, and I had no idea if Edward was winning or losing. They needed help, a distraction, something to give them an edge. My hand gripped the stone spike so tightly that a support in the brace snapped. Was I strong enough? Was I brave enough? How hard could I shove the rough stone into my body? Would this buy Seth enough time to get back on his feet? Would he heal fast enough for my sacrifice to do him any good? I raked the point of the shard up my arm, yanking my thick sweater back to expose the skin, and then pressed the sharp tip to the crease at my elbow. I already had a long scar there from my last birthday. That night, My flowing blood had been enough to catch every vampire's attention, to freeze them all in place for an instant. I prayed it would work that way again. I steeled myself and sucked in one deep breath. Victoria was distracted by the sound of my gasp. Her eyes, holding still for one tiny portion of a second, met mine. Fury and curiosity mingled strangely in her expression. I wasn't sure how I heard the low sound with all the other noises echoing off the stone wall and hammering inside my head. My own heartbeat should have been enough to drown it out. But in the split second that I stared into Victoria's eyes, I thought I heard a familiar, exasperated sigh. In that same short second, the dance broke violently apart. It happened so quickly that it was over before I could follow the sequence of events. I tried to catch up in my head. Victoria had flown out of the blurred formation and smashed into a tall spruce about halfway up the tree. She dropped back to the earth, already crouched to spring. Simultaneously, Edward, all but invisible with speed, had twisted backward and caught the unsuspecting Riley by the arm. It had looked like Edward planted his foot against Riley's back and heaved. The little campsite was filled with Riley's piercing shriek of agony. At the same time, Seth leaped to his feet, cutting off most of my view. But I could still see Victoria, and though she looked oddly deformed, as if she were unable to straighten up completely, I could see the smile I'd been dreaming of flash across her wild face. She coiled and sprang. Something small and white whistled through the air and collided with her mid-flight. The impact sounded like an explosion, and it threw her against another tree. This one snapped in half. She landed on her feet again, crouched and ready, but Edward was already in place. Relief swelled in my heart when I saw that he stood straight and perfect. Victoria kicked something aside with a flick of her bare foot, the missile that had crippled her attack. It rolled toward me, and I realized what it was. My stomach lurched. The fingers were still twitching, grasping at blades of grass. Riley's arm began to drag itself mindlessly across the ground. Seth was circling Riley again, and now Riley was retreating. He backed away from the advancing werewolf, his face rigid with pain. He raised his one arm defensively. Seth rushed Riley, and the vampire was clearly off balance. I saw Seth sink his teeth into Riley's shoulder and tear, jumping back again. With an ear-splitting metallic screech, Riley lost his other arm. Seth shook his head, flinging the arm into the woods. The broken hissing noise that came through Seth's teeth sounded like snickering. Riley screamed out a tortured plea. Victoria! Victoria did not even flinch to the sound of her name. Her eyes did not flicker once toward her partner. Seth launched himself forward with the force of a wrecking ball. The thrust carried both Seth and Riley into the trees, where the metallic screeching was matched by Riley's screams. Screams that abruptly cut off, while the sounds of rock being ripped to shreds continued. Though she spared Riley no farewell glance, Victoria seemed to realize that she was on her own. She began to back away from Edward, frenzied disappointment blazing in her eyes. She threw me one short, agonized stare of longing, and then she started to retreat faster. No, Edward crooned, his voice seductive. Stay just a little longer. She wheeled and flew toward the refuge of the forest, like an arrow from a bow. But Edward was faster, a bullet from a gun. He caught her unprotected back at the edge of the trees, and with one last simple step, the dance was over. Edward's mouth brushed once across her neck, like a caress. The squealing clamor coming from Seth's efforts covered every other noise, so there was no discernible sound to make the image one of violence. He could have been kissing her. And then the fiery tangle of hair was no longer connected to the rest of her body. The shivering orange waves fell to the ground and bounced once before rolling toward the trees. Chapter 25. Mirror. I forced my eyes, frozen wide open with shock, to move, so that I could not examine too closely the oval object wrapped in tendrils of shivering, fiery hair. Edward was in motion again. Swift and coolly businesslike, he dismembered the headless corpse. I could not go to him. I could not make my feet respond. They were bolted to the stone beneath them. But I scrutinized his every action minutely, looking for any evidence that he had been harmed. My heart slowed to a healthier rhythm when I found nothing. He was lithe and graceful as ever. I couldn't even see a tear in his clothes. He did not look at me, where I stood frozen to the cliff wall, horrified, while he piled the quivering, twitching limbs and then covered them with dry pine needles. He still did not meet my shocked gaze as he darted into the forest after Seth. I didn't have time to recover before both he and Seth were back, Edward with his arms full of Riley. Seth was carrying a large chunk, the torso, in his mouth. They added their burden to the pile, and Edward pulled a silver rectangle from his pocket. He flipped open the butane lighter and held the flame to the dry tinder. It caught at once. Long tongues of orange fire licked rapidly across the pyre. "Get every piece," Edward said in a low aside to Seth. Together, the vampire and the werewolf scoured the campsite, occasionally tossing small lumps of white stone into the blaze. Seth handled the pieces with his teeth. My brain wasn't working well enough for me to understand why he didn't change back to a form with hands. Edward kept his eyes on his work. And then they were done, and the raging fire was sending a pillar of choking purple toward the sky. The thick smoke curled up slowly, looking more solid than it should. It smelled like burning incense, and the scent was uncomfortable. It was heavy, too strong. Seth made that snickering sound again, deep in his chest. A smile flickered across Edward's tense face. Edward stretched out his arm. His hand curled into a fist. Seth grinned, revealing the long row of dagger teeth, and bumped his nose against Edward's hand. "Nice teamwork," Edward murmured. Seth coughed a laugh. Then Edward took a deep breath and turned slowly to face me. I did not understand his expression. His eyes were as wary as if I were another enemy. More than wary, they were afraid. Yet he'd shown no fear at all when he'd faced Victoria and Riley. My mind was stuck, stunned and useless as my body. I stared at him bewildered. "Bella, love," he said in his softest tone, walking toward me with exaggerated slowness, his hands held up, palms forward. Dazed as I was, it reminded me oddly of a suspect approaching a policeman, showing that he wasn't armed. "Bella, can you drop the rock, please? Carefully. Don't hurt yourself." I'd forgotten all about my crude weapon, though I realized now that I was grasping it so hard that my knuckle was screaming in protest. Was it rebroken? Carlisle would put me in a cast for sure this time. Edward hesitated a few feet from me, his hands still in the air, his eyes still fearful. It took me a few long seconds to remember how to move my fingers. Then the rock clattered to the ground, while my hands stayed frozen in the same position. Edward relaxed slightly when my hands were empty, but came no closer. "You don't have to be afraid, Bella," Edward murmured. "You're safe. I won't hurt you." The mystifying promise only confused me further. I stared at him like an imbecile, trying to understand. "It's going to be all right, Bella. I know you're frightened now, but it's over. No one is going to hurt you. I won't touch you. I won't hurt you," he said again. My eyes blinked furiously, and I found my voice. "Why do you keep saying that?" I took an unsteady step toward him, and he leaned away from my advance. "What's wrong?" I whispered. "What do you mean? Are you..." His golden eyes were suddenly as confused as I felt. "Aren't you afraid of me?" "Afraid of you? Why?" I staggered forward another step, and then tripped over something. My own feet, probably. Edward caught me, and I buried my face in his chest and started to sob. Bella. Bella, I'm so sorry. It's over. It's over. I'm fine, I gasped. I'm okay. I'm just freaking out. Give me a minute. His arms tightened around me. I'm so sorry, he murmured again and again. I clung to him until I could breathe. And then I was kissing him. His chest, his shoulder, his neck, every part of him that I could reach. Slowly, my brain started to work again. Are you okay? I demanded between kisses. Did she hurt you at all? I am absolutely fine, he promised, burying his face in my hair. Seth? Edward chuckled. More than fine. Very pleased with himself, in fact. The others? Alice? Esme? The wolves? All fine. It's over there, too. It went just as smoothly as I promised. We got the worst of it here. I let myself absorb that for a moment, let it sink in and settle in my head. My family and my friends were safe. Victoria was never coming after me again. It was over. We were all going to be fine. But I couldn't completely take in the good news while I was still so confused. Tell me why, I insisted. Why did you think I would be afraid of you? I'm sorry, he said, apologizing yet again. For what? I had no idea. So sorry. I didn't want you to see that. See me like that. I know I must have terrified you. I had to think about that for another minute, about the hesitant way he'd approached me, his hands in the air, like I was going to run if he moved too fast. Seriously? I finally asked. You... what? Thought you'd scared me off? I snorted. Snorting was good. A voice couldn't tremble or break during a snort. It sounded impressively offhand. He put his hand under my chin and tilted my head back to read my face. Bella, I just... He hesitated and then forced the words out. I just beheaded and dismembered a sentient creature not 20 yards from you. That doesn't bother you? He frowned at me. I shrugged. Shrugging was good, too. Very blasé. Not really. I was only afraid that you and Seth were going to get hurt. I wanted to help, but there's only so much I can do. His suddenly livid expression made my voice fade out. Yes, he said, his tone clipped. Your little stunt with the rock. You know that nearly gave me a heart attack. Not the easiest thing to do, that. His furious glower made it hard to answer. I wanted to help. Seth was hurt. Seth was only feigning that he was hurt, Bella. It was a trick. And then you. He shook his head, unable to finish. Seth couldn't see what you were doing, so I had to step in. Seth's a bit disgruntled that he can't claim a single-handed defeat now. Seth was faking? Edward nodded sternly. Oh. We both looked at Seth, who was studiously ignoring us, watching the flames. Smugness radiated from every hair in his fur. Well, I didn't know that, I said, on the offense now. And it's not easy being the only helpless person around. Just you wait till I'm a vampire. I'm not going to be sitting on the sidelines next time. A dozen emotions flitted across his face before he settled on being amused. Next time. Did you anticipate another war soon? With my luck? Who knows? He rolled his eyes, but I could see that he was flying. The relief was making us both lightheaded. It was over. Or was it? Hold on. Didn't you say something before? I flinched, remembering what exactly it had been before. What was I going to say to Jacob? My splintered heart throbbed out a painful, aching beat. It was hard to believe, almost impossible, but the hardest part of this day was not behind me, and then I soldiered on. About a complication? And Alice needing to nail down the schedule for Sam? You said it was going to be close. What was going to be close? Edward's eyes flickered back to Seth, and they exchanged a loaded glance. Well, I asked. It's nothing, really, Edward said quickly. But we do need to be on our way. He started to pull me into place on his back, but I stiffened and drew away. Define nothing. Edward took my face between his palms. We only have a minute, so don't panic, all right? I told you that you had no reason to be afraid. Trust me on that, please. I nodded, trying to hide the sudden terror. How much more could I handle before I collapsed? No reason to be afraid, got it? He pursed his lips for a second, deciding what to say, and then he glanced abruptly at Seth, as if the wolf had called him. What's she doing? Edward asked. Seth whined. It was an anxious, uneasy sound. It made the hair on the back of my neck rise. Everything was dead silent for one endless second. And then Edward gasped. No! And one of his hands flew out as if to grab something that I couldn't see. Don't! A spasm wrought through Seth's body, and a howl blistering with agony ripped from his lungs. Edward fell to his knees at the exact same moment, gripping the sides of his head with two hands, his face furrowed in pain. I screamed once in bewildered terror and dropped to my knees beside him. Stupidly, I tried to pull his hands from his face. My palms, clammy with sweat, slid off his marble skin. Edward! Edward! His eyes focused on me. With obvious effort, he pulled his clenched teeth apart. It's okay. We're going to be fine. It's... He broke off and winced again. What's happening? I cried out while Seth howled in anguish. We're fine. We're going to be okay. Edward gasped. Sam, help him. And I realized in that instant, when he said Sam's name, that he was not speaking of himself and Seth. No unseen force was attacking them. This time, the crisis was not here. He was using the pack plural. I'd burned through all my adrenaline. My body had nothing left. I sagged, and Edward caught me before I could hit the rocks. He sprang to his feet, me in his arms. Seth! Edward shouted. Seth was crouched, still tensed in agony, looking as if he meant to launch himself into the forest. No, Edward ordered. You go straight home, now. As fast as you can. Seth whimpered, shaking his great head from side to side. Seth, trust me. The huge wolf stared into Edward's agonized eyes for one long second, and then he straightened up and flew into the trees, disappearing like a ghost. Edward cradled me tightly against his chest, and then we were also hurtling through the shadowy forest, taking a different path than the wolf. Edward! I fought to force the words through my constricted throat. What happened, Edward? What happened to Sam? Where are we going? What's happening? We have to go back to the clearing, he told me in a low voice. We knew there was a good probability of this happening. Earlier this morning, Alice saw it and passed it through Sam to Seth. The Volturi decided it was time to intercede. The Volturi. Too much. My mind refused to make sense of the words, pretended it couldn't understand. The trees jolted past us. He was running downhill so fast that it felt as if we were plummeting, falling out of control. Don't panic. They aren't coming for us. It's just the normal contingent of the guard that usually cleans up this kind of mess. Nothing momentous. They're merely doing their job. Of course, they seem to have timed their arrival very carefully, which leads me to believe that no one in Italy would mourn if these newborns had reduced the size of the Cullen family. The words came through his teeth, hard and bleak. I'll know for sure what they were thinking when they get to the clearing. Is that why we're going back? I whispered. Could I handle this? Images of flowing black robes crept into my unwilling mind, and I flinched away from them. I was close to a breaking point. It's part of the reason. Mostly it will be safer for us to present a united front at this point. They have no reason to harass us, but Jane's with them. If she thought we were alone somewhere away from the others, it might tempt her. Like Victoria, Jane will probably guess that I'm with you. Dimitri, of course, is with her. He could find me if Jane asked him to. I didn't want to think that name. I didn't want to see that blindingly exquisite childlike face in my head. A strange sound came out of my throat. Shh, Bella, shh. It's all going to be fine. Alice can see that. Alice could see? But then where were the wolves? Where was the pack? The pack? They had to leave quickly. The Volturi do not honor truces with werewolves. I could hear my breathing get faster, but I couldn't control it. I started to gasp. I swear they will be fine, Edward promised me. The Volturi won't recognize the scent. They won't realize the wolves are here. This isn't a species they are familiar with. The pack will be fine. I couldn't process his explanation. My concentration was ripped to shreds by my fears. We're going to be fine, he had said before. And Seth? Howling in agony? Edward had avoided my first question, distracted me with the Volturi. I was very close to the edge, just clinging by my fingertips. The trees were a racing blur that flowed around him like jade waters. What happened? I whispered again. Before, when Seth was howling? When you were hurt? Edward hesitated. Edward, tell me! It was all over, he whispered. I could barely hear him over the wind his speed created. The wolves didn't count their half. They thought they had them all. Of course, Alice couldn't see. What happened? One of the newborns was hiding. Leah found him. She was being stupid, cocky, trying to prove something. She engaged him alone. Leah? I repeated, and I was too weak to feel shame for the relief that flooded through me. Is she going to be okay? Leah wasn't hurt, Edward mumbled. I stared at him for a long second. Sam, help him, Edward had gasped. Him, not her. We're almost there, Edward said, and he stared at a fixed point in the sky. Automatically, my eyes followed his. There was a dark purple cloud hanging low over the trees. A cloud? But it was so abnormally sunny. No, not a cloud. I recognized the thick column of smoke, just like the one at our campsite. Edward, I said, my voice nearly inaudible. Edward, someone got hurt? I'd heard Seth's agony, seen the torture in Edward's face. Yes, he whispered. Who? I asked, though of course I already knew the answer. Of course I did. Of course. The trees were slowing around us as we came to our destination. It took him a long moment to answer me. Jacob, he said. I was able to nod once. Of course, I whispered. And then I slipped off the edge I was clinging to inside my head. Everything went black. I was first aware of the cool hands touching me. More than one pair of hands. Arms holding me. A palm curved to fit my cheek. Fingers stroking my forehead. And more fingers pressed lightly into my wrist. Then I was aware of the voices. They were just a humming at first. And then they grew in volume and clarity, like someone was turning up a radio. Carlyle, it's been 5 minutes. Edward's voice, anxious. She'll come around when she's ready, Edward. Carlyle's voice, always calm and sure. She's had too much to deal with today. Let her mind protect itself. But my mind was not protected. It was trapped in the knowledge that had not left me, even in unconsciousness, the pain that was part of the blackness. I felt totally disconnected from my body, like I was caged in some small corner of my head, no longer at the controls. But I couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't think. The agony was too strong for that. There was no escape from it. Jacob. Jacob. No, 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 no. Alice, how long do we have? Edward demanded, his voice still tense. Carlyle's soothing words had not helped. From farther away, Alice's voice. It was brightly chipper. Another 5 minutes, and Bella will open her eyes in 37 seconds. I wouldn't doubt that she can hear us now. Bella, honey? This was Esme's soft, comforting voice. Can you hear me? You're safe now, dear. Yes, I was safe. Did that really matter? Then cool lips were at my ear, and Edward was speaking the words that allowed me to escape from the torture that had me caged inside my own head. He's going to live, Bella. Jacob Black is healing as I speak. He'll be fine. As the pain and dread eased, I found my way back to my body. My eyelids fluttered. Oh, Bella. Edward sighed in relief, and his lips touched mine. Edward, I whispered. Yes, I'm here. I got my lids to open, and I stared into warm gold. Jacob is okay? I asked. Yes, he promised. I watched his eyes carefully for some sign that he was placating me, but they were perfectly clear. I examined him myself, Carlyle said then. I turned my head to find his face, only a few feet away. Carlyle's expression was serious and reassuring at the same time. It was impossible to doubt him. His life is not in any danger. He was healing at an incredible rate, though his injuries were extensive enough that it will still be a few days before he is back to normal, even if the rate of repair holds steady. As soon as we're done here, I will do what I can to help him. Sam is trying to get him to phase back to his human form. That will make treating him easier. Carlyle smiled slightly. I've never been to veterinarian school. What happened to him? I whispered. How bad are his injuries? Carlyle's face was serious again. Another wolf was in trouble. Leah? I breathed. Yes. He knocked her out of the way, but he didn't have time to defend himself. The newborn got his arms around him. Most of the bones on the right half of his body were shattered. I flinched. Sam and Paul got there in time. He was already improving when they took him back to La Push. He'll be back to normal? I asked. Yes, Bella. He won't have any permanent damage. I took a deep breath. 3 minutes, Alice said quietly. I struggled, trying to get vertical. Edward realized what I was doing and helped me to my feet. I stared at the scene in front of me. The Cullens stood in a loose semicircle around the bonfire. There were hardly any flames visible, just the thick purple-black smoke, hovering like a disease against the bright grass. Jasper stood closest to the solid-seeming haze, in its shadow, so that his skin did not glitter brilliantly in the sun the way the others did. He had his back to me, his shoulders tense, his arms slightly extended. There was something there, in his shadow, something he crouched over with wary intensity. I was too numb to feel more than a mild shock when I realized what it was. There were 8 vampires in the clearing. The girl was curled into a small ball beside the flames, her arms wrapped around her legs. She was very young, younger than me. She looked maybe 15, dark-haired and slight. Her eyes were focused on me, and the irises were a shocking, brilliant red, much brighter than Riley's, almost glowing. They wheeled wildly out of control. Edward saw my bewildered expression. She surrendered, he told me quietly. That's one I've never seen before. Only Carlyle would think of offering. Jasper doesn't approve. I couldn't tear my gaze away from the scene beside the fire. Jasper was rubbing absently at his left forearm. Is Jasper all right? I whispered. He's fine. The venom stings. He was bitten? I asked, horrified. He was trying to be everywhere at once, trying to make sure Alice had nothing to do, actually. Edward shook his head. Alice doesn't need anyone's help. Alice grimaced toward her true love. Overprotective fool. The young female suddenly threw her head back like an animal and wailed shrilly. Jasper growled at her and she cringed back, but her fingers dug into the ground like claws, and her head whipped back and forth in anguish. Jasper took a step toward her, slipping deeper into his crouch. Edward moved with overdone casualness, turning our bodies so that he was between the girl and me. I peeked around his arm to watch the thrashing girl and Jasper. Carlyle was at Jasper's side in an instant. He put a restraining hand on his most recent son's arm. "Have you changed your mind, young one?" Carlyle asked, calm as ever. "We don't want to destroy you, but we will if you can't control yourself."
"How can you stand it?" the girl groaned in a high, clear voice. "I want her!"
Her bright crimson irises focused on Edward, through him, beyond him to me, and her nails ripped through the hard soil again. "You must stand it," Carlyle told her gravely. "You must exercise control. It is possible, and it is the only thing that will save you now." The girl clutched her dirt-encrusted hands around her head, yowling quietly.
"Shouldn't we move away from her?" I whispered, tugging on Edward's arm.
The girl's lips pulled back over her teeth when she heard my voice, her expression one of torment. "We have to stay here," Edward murmured. "They are coming to the north end of the clearing now." My heart burst into a sprint as I scanned the clearing, but I couldn't see anything past the thick pall of smoke. After a second of fruitless searching, my gaze crept back to the young female vampire. She was still watching me, her eyes half mad. I met the girl's stare for a long moment. Chin-length dark hair framed her face, which was alabaster pale. It was hard to tell if her features were beautiful, twisted as they were by rage and thirst. The feral red eyes were dominant, hard to look away from. She glared at me viciously, shuddering and writhing every few seconds. I stared at her, mesmerized, wondering if I were looking into a mirror of my future. Then Carlyle and Jasper began to back toward the rest of us. Emmett, Rosalie, and Esme all converged hastily around where Edward stood with Alice and me, a united front, as Edward had said, with me at the heart, in the safest place. I tore my attention away from the wild girl to search for the approaching monsters. There was still nothing to see. I glanced at Edward, and his eyes were locked straight ahead. I tried to follow his gaze, but there was only the smoke, dense, oily smoke twisting low to the ground, rising lazily, undulating against the grass. It billowed forward, darker in the middle. "Hmm," a dead voice murmured from the mist. I recognized the apathy at once. "Welcome, Jane." Edward's tone was coolly courteous. The dark shapes came closer, separating themselves from the haze, solidifying. I knew it would be Jane in the front, the darkest cloak almost black, and the smallest figure by more than 2 feet. I could just barely make out Jane's angelic features in the shade of the cowl. The four gray-shrouded figures hulking behind her were also somewhat familiar. I was sure I recognized the biggest one, and while I stared, trying to confirm my suspicion, Felix looked up. He let his hood fall back slightly so that I could see him wink at me and smile. Edward was very still at my side, tightly in control. Jane's gaze moved slowly across the luminous faces of the Cullens, and then touched on the newborn girl beside the fire. The newborn had her head in her hands again.
"I don't understand."
Jane's voice was toneless, but not quite as uninterested as before. "She has surrendered," Edward explained, answering the confusion in her mind. Jane's dark eyes flashed to his face.
"Surrendered?"
Felix and another shadow exchanged a quick glance. Edward shrugged. Carlyle gave her the option.
"There are no options for those who break the rules," Jane said flatly.
Carlyle spoke then, his voice mild. "That's in your hands. As long as she was willing to halt her attack on us, I saw no need to destroy her. She was never taught."
"That is irrelevant," Jane insisted.
As you wish.
Jane stared at Carlyle in consternation. She shook her head infinitesimally, and then composed her features.
Aro hoped that we would get far enough west to see you, Carlyle. He sends his regards.
Carlyle nodded. I would appreciate it if you would convey mine to him.
Of course.
Jane smiled. Her face was almost too lovely when it was animated. She looked back toward the smoke.
It appears that you've done our work for us today, for the most part.
Her eyes flickered to the hostage.
Just out of professional curiosity. How many were there?
They left quite a wake of destruction in Seattle.
18, including this one, Carlyle answered.
Jane's eyes widened, and she looked at the fire again, seeming to reassess the size of it. Felix and the other shadow exchanged a longer glance.
18, she repeated, her voice sounding unsure for the first time.
All brand new, Carlyle said dismissively. They were unskilled.
All?
Her voice turned sharp.
Then who was their creator?
Her name was Victoria, Edward answered, no emotion in his voice.
Was?
Jane asked. Edward inclined his head toward the eastern forest. Jane's eyes snapped up and focused on something far in the distance. The other pillar of smoke? I didn't look away to check. Jane stared to the east for a long moment, and then examined the closer bonfire again.
This Victoria, she was in addition to the 18 here?
Yes. She had only one other with her. He was not as young as this one here, but no older than a year.
20, Jane breathed. Who dealt with the creator?
I did, Edward told her.
Jane's eyes narrowed, and she turned to the girl beside the fire.
You there,
she said, her dead voice harsher than before.
Your name?
The newborn shot a baleful glare at Jane, her lips pressed tightly together. Jane smiled back angelically. The newborn girl's answering scream was ear-piercing. Her body arched stiffly into a distorted, unnatural position. I looked away, fighting the urge to cover my ears. I gritted my teeth, hoping to control my stomach. The screaming intensified. I tried to concentrate on Edward's face, smooth and unemotional, but that made me remember when it had been Edward under Jane's torturing gaze, and I felt sicker. I looked at Alice instead, and Esme next to her. Their faces were as empty as his. Finally, it was quiet.
Your name?
Jane said again, her voice inflectionless.
Bree,
the girl gasped. Jane smiled, and the girl shrieked again. I held my breath until the sound of her agony stopped.
She'll tell you anything you want to know, Edward said through his teeth. You don't have to do that.
Jane looked up, sudden humor in her usually dead eyes.
Oh, I know,
she said to Edward, grinning at him before she turned back to the young vampire Bree.
Bree,
Jane said, her voice cold again.
Is his story true? Were there 20 of you?
The girl lay panting, the side of her face pressed against the earth. She spoke quickly.
19 or 20, maybe more, I don't know.
She cringed, terrified that her ignorance might bring on another round of torture.
Sarah and the one whose name I don't know got in a fight on the way. And this Victoria, did she create you? I don't know,
she said, flinching again.
Riley never said her name. I didn't see that night. It was so dark and it hurt.
Bree shuddered.
He didn't want us to be able to think of her. He said that our thoughts weren't safe.
Jane's eyes flickered to Edward, and then back to the girl. Victoria had planned this well. If she hadn't followed Edward, there would have been no way to know for certain that she was involved.
Tell me about Riley, Jane said. Why did he bring you here? Riley told us that we had to destroy the strange yellow eyes here,
Bree babbled quickly and willingly.
He said it would be easy. He said that the city was theirs, and they were coming to get us. He said once they were gone, all the blood would be ours. He gave us our scent.
Bree lifted one hand and stabbed a finger in my direction. He said we would know that we had the right coven because she would be with them. He said whoever got to her first could have her. I heard Edward's jaw flex beside me.
It looks like Riley was wrong about the easy part, Jane noted.
Bree nodded, seeming relieved that the conversation had taken this non-painful course. She sat up carefully.
I don't know what happened. We split up, but the others never came. And Riley left us, and he didn't come to help like he promised. And then it was so confusing, and everybody was in pieces.
She shuddered again.
I was afraid. I wanted to run away. That one,
she looked at Carlyle,
said they wouldn't hurt me if I stopped fighting.
Ah, but that wasn't his gift to offer, young one, Jane murmured,
her voice oddly gentle now.
Broken rules demand a consequence.
Bree stared at her, not comprehending. Jane looked at Carlyle.
Are you sure you got all of them? The other half that split off?
Carlyle's face was very smooth as he nodded.
We split up, too.
Jane half smiled.
I can't deny that I'm impressed.
The big shadows behind her murmured in agreement.
I've never seen a coven escape this magnitude of offensive intact. Do you know what was behind it? It seems like extreme behavior, considering the way you live here. And why was the girl the key?
Her eyes rested unwilling on me for one short second. I shivered. Victoria held a grudge against Bella, Edward told her, his voice impassive. Jane laughed. The sound was golden, the bubbling laugh of a happy child.
This one seems to bring out bizarrely strong reactions in our kind, she observed,
smiling directly at me, her face beatific. Edward stiffened. I looked at him in time to see his face turning away, back to Jane.
Would you please not do that? He asked in a tight voice.
Jane laughed again lightly.
Just checking. No harm done, apparently.
I shivered, deeply grateful that the strange glitch in my system, which had protected me from Jane the last time we'd met, was still in effect. Edward's arm tightened around me.
Well, it appears there's not much left for us to do.
Odd, Jane said, apathy creeping back into her voice.
We're not used to being rendered unnecessary. It's too bad we missed the fight. It sounds like it would have been entertaining to watch.
Yes, Edward answered her quickly, his voice sharp. And you were so close. It's a shame you didn't arrive just a half hour earlier. Perhaps then you could have fulfilled your purpose here. Jane met Edward's glare with unwavering eyes.
Yes. Quite a pity how things turned out, isn't it?
Edward nodded once to himself, his suspicions confirmed. Jane turned to look at the newborn Bree again, her face completely bored.
Felix?
She met his glare with unwavering eyes.
Yes. Quite a pity how things turned out, isn't it?
Edward nodded once to himself, his suspicions confirmed. Jane turned to look at the newborn Bree again, her face completely bored.
Felix?
She drawled. Wait, Edward interjected. Jane raised one eyebrow, but Edward was staring at Carlyle while he spoke in an urgent voice. We could explain the rules to the young one. She doesn't seem unwilling to learn. She didn't know what she was doing.
Of course, Carlyle answered. We would certainly be prepared to take responsibility for Bree.
Jane's expression was torn between amusement and disbelief.
We don't make exceptions, she said, and we don't give second chances. It's bad for our reputation. Which reminds me.
Suddenly, her eyes were on me again, and her cherubic face dimpled.
Caius will be so interested to hear that you're still human, Bella. Perhaps he'll decide to visit.
The date is set, Alice told Jane, speaking for the first time. Perhaps we'll come to visit you in a few months.
Jane's smile faded, and she shrugged indifferently, never looking at Alice.
She turned to face Carlyle.
It was nice to meet you, Carlyle. I thought Aro was exaggerating. Well, until we meet again.
Carlyle nodded, his expression pained.
Take care of that, Felix,
Jane said, nodding toward Bree, her voice dripping boredom.
I want to go home.
Don't watch, Edward whispered in my ear. I was only too eager to follow his instruction. I'd see more than enough for one day, more than enough for one lifetime. I squeezed my eyes tightly together and turned my face into Edward's chest. But I could still hear. There was a deep rumbling growl, and then a high-pitched keen that was horribly familiar. That sound cut off quickly, and then the only sound was a sickening crunching and snapping. Edward's hand rubbed anxiously against my shoulders.
Come,
Jane said, and I looked up in time to see the backs of the tall gray cloaks drifting away toward the curling smoke. The incense smell was strong again, fresh. The gray cloaks disappeared into the thick mist. Chapter 26, Ethics. The counter in Alice's bathroom was covered with 1,000 different products, all claiming to beautify a person's surface. Since everyone in this house was both perfect and impermeable, I could only assume that she'd bought most of these things with me in mind. I read the labels numbly, struck by the waste. I was careful never to look in the long mirror. Alice combed through my hair with a slow, rhythmic motion.
That's enough, Alice, I said tonelessly. I want to go back to La Push.
How many hours had I waited for Charlie to finally leave Billy's house so that I could see Jacob? Each minute not knowing if Jacob was still breathing or not had seemed like 10 lifetimes. And then, when at last I'd been allowed to go, to see for myself that Jacob was alive, the time had gone so quickly. I felt like I'd barely caught my breath before Alice was calling Edward, insisting that I keep up this ridiculous sleepover facade. It seemed so insignificant.
Jacob's still unconscious, Alice answered. Carlyle or Edward will call when he's awake. Anyway, we need to go see Charlie. He was there at Billy's house. He saw that Carlyle and Edward are back from their trip, and he's bound to be suspicious when you get home.
I already had my story memorized and corroborated.
I don't care. I want to be there when Jacob wakes up.
You need to think of Charlie now. You've had a long day. Sorry, I know that doesn't begin to cover it, but that doesn't mean that you can shirk your responsibilities. Her voice was serious, almost chiding.
It's more important now than ever that Charlie stays safely in the dark. Play your role first, Bella, and then you can do what you want second. Part of being a Cullen is being meticulously responsible.
Of course she was right, and if not for this same reason, a reason that was more powerful than all my fear and pain and guilt, Carlyle would never have been able to talk me into leaving Jacob's side, unconscious or not.
Go home, Alice ordered. Talk to Charlie. Flesh out your alibi. Keep him safe.
I stood, and the blood flowed down to my feet, stinging like the pricks of 1,000 needles. I'd been sitting still for a long time.
That dress is adorable on you, Alice cooed.
Huh? Oh, thanks again for the clothes, I mumbled out of courtesy rather than real gratitude.
You need the evidence,
Alice said, her eyes innocent and wide.
What's a shopping trip without a new outfit? It's very flattering, if I do say so myself.
I blinked, unable to remember what she'd dressed me in. I couldn't keep my thoughts from skittering away every few seconds, insects running from the light.
Jacob is fine, Bella,
Alice said, easily interpreting my preoccupation.
There's no hurry.
If you realized how much extra morphine Carlyle had to give him, what with his temperature burning it off so quickly, you would know that he's going to be out for a while. At least he wasn't in any pain. Not yet.
Is there anything you want to talk about before you leave?
Alice asked sympathetically.
You must be more than a little traumatized.
I knew what she was curious about, but I had other questions. Will I be like that? I asked her, my voice subdued, like that girl Bree in the meadow. There were many things I needed to think of, but I couldn't seem to get her out of my head. The newborn whose other life was now abruptly over. Her face, twisted with desire for my blood, lingered behind my eyelids. Alice stroked my arm. Everyone is different. But something like that, yes. I was very still, trying to imagine. It passes, she promised. How soon? She shrugged. A few years, maybe less. It might be different for you. I've never seen anyone go through this who's chosen it beforehand. It should be interesting to see how that affects you.
Interesting, I repeated.
We'll keep you out of trouble.
I know that. I trust you. My voice was monotone, dead. Alice's forehead puckered.
If you're worried about Carlisle and Edward, I'm sure they'll be fine. I believe Sam is beginning to trust us. Well, to trust Carlisle, at least. It's a good thing, too. I imagine the atmosphere got a little tense when Carlisle had to re-break the fractures.
Please, Alice.
Sorry.
I took a deep breath to steady myself. Jacob had begun healing too quickly, and some of his bones had set wrong. He'd been out cold for the process, but it was still hard to think about.
Alice, can I ask you a question?
About the future? She was suddenly wary.
You know I don't see everything.
It's not that exactly, but you do see my future sometimes. Why is that, do you think, when nothing else works on me?
Not what Jane can do, or Edward, or Aro?
My sentence trailed off with my interest level. My curiosity on this point was fleeting, heavily overshadowed by more pressing emotions. Alice, however, found the question very interesting.
Jasper, too, Bella. His talent works on your body, just as well as it does on anyone else's. That's the difference. Do you see it?
Jasper's abilities affect the body physically. He really does calm your system down or excite it.
It's not an illusion. And I see visions of outcomes, not the reasons and thoughts behind the decisions that create them. It's outside the mind, not an illusion either, reality, or at least one version of it.
But Jane and Edward and Aro and Dimitri, they work inside the mind.
Jane only creates an illusion of pain. She doesn't really hurt your body. You only think you feel it. You see, Bella? You are safe inside your mind. No one can reach you there. It's no wonder that Aro was so curious about your future abilities.
She watched my face to see if I was following her logic. In truth, her words had all started to run together, the syllables and sounds losing their meaning. I couldn't concentrate on them. Still, I nodded, trying to look like I got it. She wasn't fooled. She stroked my cheek and murmured,
"He's going to be okay, Bella. I don't need a vision to know that. Are you ready to go?"
"One more thing. Can I ask you another question about the future? I don't want specifics, just an overview."
"I'll do my best," she said, doubtful again.
"Can you still see me becoming a vampire?"
"Oh, that's easy. Sure I do."
I nodded slowly. She examined my face, her eyes unfathomable.
"Don't you know your own mind, Bella?"
"I do.
I just wanted to be sure." "I'm only as sure as you are, Bella. You know that. If you were to change your mind, what I see would change, or disappear in your case."
I sighed. "That isn't going to happen, though." She put her arms around me.
"I'm sorry. I can't really empathize. My first memory is of seeing Jasper's face in my future. I always knew that he was where my life was headed. But I can sympathize. I'm so sorry you have to choose between two good things."
I shook off her arms. "Don't feel sorry for me. There were people who deserved sympathy. I wasn't one of them, and there wasn't any choice to make. There was just breaking a good heart to attend to now. I'll go deal with Charlie." I drove my truck home, where Charlie was waiting just as suspiciously as Alice had expected.
"Hey, Bella, how was your shopping trip?" he greeted me when I walked into the kitchen.
He had his arms folded over his chest, his eyes on my face.
Long,
I said dully. We just got back. Charlie assessed my mood.
I guess you already heard about Jake, then.
Yes, the rest of the Cullens beat us home. Esme told us where Carlisle and Edward were.
Are you okay?
Worried about Jake. As soon as I make dinner, I'm going down to La Push.
I told you those motorcycles were dangerous. I hope this makes you realize that I wasn't kidding around.
I nodded as I started pulling things out of the fridge. Charlie settled himself in at the table. He seemed to be in a more talkative mood than usual.
I don't think you need to worry about Jake too much. Anyone who can cuss with that kind of energy is going to recover.
Jake was awake when you saw him? I asked, spinning to look at him.
Oh, yeah. He was awake. You should have heard him. Actually, it's better you didn't. I don't think there was anyone in La Push who couldn't hear him. I don't know where he picked up that vocabulary, but I hope he hasn't been using that kind of language around you.
He had a pretty good excuse today. How did he look?
Messed up. His friends carried him in. Good thing they're big boys, 'cause that kid's an armful.
Carlisle said his right leg is broken.
And his right arm.
Pretty much the whole right side of his body got crushed when he wrecked that damn bike.
Charlie shook his head. If I ever hear of you riding again, Bella...
No problem there, Dad. You won't.
Do you really think Jake's okay?
Sure, Bella. Don't worry.
He was himself enough to tease me.
Tease you? I echoed in shock.
Yeah. In between insulting somebody's mother and taking the Lord's name in vain, he said, "Bet you're glad she loves Cullen instead of me today, huh, Charlie?"
I turned back to the fridge so that he couldn't see my face.
And I couldn't argue. Edward's more mature than Jacob when it comes to your safety. I'll give him that much.
Jacob's plenty mature, I muttered defensively. I'm sure this wasn't his fault.
Weird day today, Charlie mused after a minute. You know, I don't put much stock in that superstitious crap, but it was odd. It was like Billy knew something bad was going to happen to Jake. He was nervous as a turkey on Thanksgiving all morning. I don't think he heard anything I said to him.
And then, weirder than that, remember back in February and March when we had all that trouble with the wolves?
I bent down to get a frying pan out of the cupboard and hid there an extra second or two.
Yeah, I mumbled.
I hope we're not going to have a problem with that again. This morning, we were out in the boat, and Billy wasn't paying any attention to me or the fish, when all of a sudden, you could hear wolves yowling in the woods. More than one, and boy was it loud. Sounded like they were right there in the village. Weirdest part was, Billy turned the boat around and headed straight back to the harbor like they were calling to him personally. Didn't even hear me ask what he was doing. The noise stopped before we got the boat docked, but all of a sudden, Billy was in the biggest hurry not to miss the game, though we had hours still. He was mumbling some nonsense about an earlier showing of a live game. I tell you, Bella, it was odd.
Well, he found some game he said he wanted to watch, but then he just ignored it. He was on the phone the whole time, calling Sue and Emily and your friend Quill's grandpa. Couldn't quite make out what he was looking for. He just chatted real casual with them. Then the howling started again right outside the house. I've never heard anything like it. I had goosebumps on my arms. I asked Billy, had to shout over the noise, if he'd been setting traps in his yard. It sounded like the animal was in serious pain. I winced, but Charlie was so caught up in his story that he didn't notice. Of course, I forgot all about that till just this minute, 'cause that's when Jake made it home. One minute it was that wolf yowling, and then you couldn't hear it anymore. Jake's cussing drowned it right out. Got a set of lungs on him, that boy does. Charlie paused for a minute.